please put your hands together and welcome Mike Biritz. Okie doke, right, we know how this works. So, Mike, we're going to start talking about your sort of early life, born in Sutton. Tell us about your sort of childhood. What was that like?
Yeah, well, like you say, I grew up in Sutton, which is in South London. I've got a brother and a sister. My younger brother's 7 years younger than me, and older sister who's 3 years older. And we had a kind of fairly normal family life, I guess.
Well, it didn't appear to be quite normal in terms of dressing up was concerned.
Well, yes. Like, actually, my sister is to blame for this, but my little brother, when he was born, was basically her clothes horse. And so she used to dress him up as Queen Victoria. So we've got plenty of photos of my little brother, about the same age Isaac is now, if you've met Isaac. And yeah, dressed in all kinds of shawls and dresses and silly things at my grandma's house.
So now it's cassettes and things, so there you go. Anyway, and so what were your main interests when you were young?
Oh, all sorts of things, really. I was in the Scouts, I was in the St. John Cadets doing first aid. I really loved dancing. So when my sister went, as most little girls do, to ballet class, and she was, you know, in the class, and I was there in the pushchair on the sort of stage watching my sister dance and doing the moves with my fingers. So my mum said, well, put him in the class. So somewhere about age 2-3, I got put in the same dance class that my sister was in, and I loved it, and I was good at it. The rest is history, really. So learned to tap dance, learned sort of modern disco and ballet from about age 3. if you want to see that, you have to come and see The Miracle.
We'll come to that in a while. And so, I mean, dancing was a sort of an important part for you. Just tell us a bit more about that in terms of productions you may have been.
So obviously you've seen the kind of, you've been framed clips with, you know, children dancing on stage and the sort of sets fall down, you know, that kind of thing that we did with my dance school. But through the Scouts, I was also in what's called a gang show. So all the local scouts and guides would get together. The one that I was in Southwest London was actually quite a successful, quite a big show. So I used to do a production every year, singing, dancing with a whole bunch of scouts from across the Southwest region. Right from age when I was a cub, I think I was old enough, until I was, you know, went to uni. So.
Right, so riding along on the
wave,
all that stuff. Yeah, that's good. So, I mean, that must have been a real interest for you at school as well.
Yeah, somewhat. I think school was an interesting place for me. I was at a grammar school in Sutton.
You can just jump down to nothing just for a moment. Thank you. Yes, go on. Sorry.
But I think, yeah, certainly our drama at school was, I don't know, when you're at an all-boys school and you do dancing, you get picked on a little bit. So I kind of tried to avoid people knowing that I did anything of the sort. It wasn't really something that was part of my school life.
But you did a qualification in, I mean, A-levels in dance?
Oh, okay, so that has to be
really...
So I did do an A-level in dance, yes. A GCSE and an A-level in dance, but I did those outside of school, in the dance school that I was a part of.
Yes, and having danced for so long, you must have done really, really well.
Yes, I got an A at GCSE dance, and I got a N at... A-level dance.
Is that the worst fail you can get?
You can get a U, which is unclassified, and N is like the next one.
Like nowhere near.
don't ask me how that happens. I have no idea.
Okay, so at that sort of time, what was your sort of main musical interest? What was your track that you get to play for this period of time?
Yeah, so this track actually has kind of a double... One of the reasons I love it so much is because of two things. So my dad was very much into Queen. As a boy, he used to play Queen to us a lot. So this is a track from a Queen album. But also, in my adult life, I've been part of a covers band with some friends from work. Perhaps we'll talk more about that later. So we used to play this as one of the tracks we used to cover. It's Hammer to Fall by Queen.
I'll tell you what's really, really, really interesting about this. Is you can tell the audience reaction to music. And so, if you happen to notice, there were four of you going like this, and the rest are...
I'm sorry, it's going to get a bit worse before it gets better. Sorry.
Now, how does that link with roller hockey?
Okay.
And just rollering at all.
Yeah, so I used to love to roller skate too. My first job at age 16, one of my first jobs was to work for a leisure centre in a roller disco. My microphone is gradually sinking once again. I used to work, I used to go to a leisure centre, and every Sunday night, in fact, I would skate around this kind of large badminton court, and hundreds of people would come and pay money, and we would, as a steward, my job was to kind of give out roller skates and then to skate around behind people, and when they fell over, to stick your arm out and make sure nobody else kind of tripped over them. So that was a great fun job to have at age 16.
Yes, and you'd be pleased to know that one of the tracks was going to be tragedy, but we decided against it.
Yeah. So what we used to do is we used to, as we skated around, all the stewards would dance together. So what we would do is, when certain songs came on and tragedy was one of them, we'd all kind of line up going round and round this arena, dancing the kind of, you know, tragedy and all that stuff. It was,
what were they doing?
Cheesy but funny. No, you're not getting it.
Now, obviously, all that experience with tap and with ballet and all sorts of dancing obviously led you to dinosaurs.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. I guess another of my interests as a kid, we used to go on lots of UK holidays, kind of camping with the family, down to kind of Lyme Regis, that kind of thing. And I used to love fossil hunting. And I remember at age 12, Jurassic Park came out. And I went to the cinema to see Jurassic Park, and I think around that time, although I don't think the film was necessarily connected, I decided I want to be a paleontologist. That's what I want to do. So from that point onwards, my whole sort of high school life, I had some idea that, yeah, when I get to the end, I'm going to go to uni and I'm going to study dinosaurs at university.
And tell us about Dinosaur Island. I mean, lots of us won't have heard of Dinosaur Island, although obviously you did.
Yep. So, funny enough, I did actually end up studying dinosaurs at university. So I was at university in Portsmouth. And whilst there, the BBC approached one of my tutors to say, look, we want to make a sort of time team type show about dinosaurs on the Isle of Wight. And, you know, can you help us? Can you make locations? And can you provide people to do the digging? And they said, well, yeah, we've got loads of budding students who'd love to help. So I was one of the students. If anyone remembers that show, it wasn't on for very long. where we went to the Isle of Wight for sort of a week and a half, and it was a kind of live show. So they used to sort of, every Saturday night they'd do an hour slot with little sections of us digging away and trying to find dinosaurs on the Isle of Wight.
So you're a TV star?
Indeed.
Wonderful. And so around about that sort of time, what would have been the sort of music that inspired you then?
Yeah. Well, a friend of mine at uni who was on my dinosaur course, he played the electric guitar, and he used to practice in his room a lot. And he used to play a lot of music by Guns N' Roses. So you can hear coming in Guns N' Roses, Sweet Child of Mine, which a song I really, really love. You can see where I get it from because of Queen. It's not that much of a jump to kind of this kind of music.
Always love the lyrics on that song. So that was your sort of your first year at uni, and then you started going to a church called a Frontier Church. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, so I've grown up going to church. Always been to church, but it never really meant much. I'd been to a Church of England primary school, I'd been baptised, been confirmed in the Church of England, but it never hit here. Always just kind of, church was this thing you do on a Sunday as a bit of a club that you just turn up to. And I was working in a chip shop in Portsmouth. If anyone knows Eastney, there's a chip shop called The Flagship. I used to work in there as a student. And one evening I was working with this lady called Hope, and she was talking to me about her faith and her Christianity, and I said, oh, well, I'm a Christian, you know. And we were chatting about it, and it was obviously quite clear to her that, you know, I wasn't a Christian in the strict sense of the word, because I wasn't going to church. So, you know, she invited me to church, and she invited me to the church that had just started in the community centre next door to the chip shop where she was worshipping. And so this church was a New Frontiers church, so not, you know, kind of a free church-like environment. And that day, something happened for me. God spoke to me through a number of things. If you want more details, do ask me. But I walked away from that Sunday a different person. A lot of people have this kind of, they can talk about their Christian experience as something that happens kind of over a period of time. But for me, it was really, you know, that Sunday morning was the moment.
Richard Shaw?
Yes, Richard Shaw was the pastor there.
And had an impact on you?
Definitely. I mean, he then took me under his wing and mentored me a little, and met with me every kind of week, but he was the guy preaching that Sunday morning, and after we'd finished, you know, I felt like he was just talking to me alone in the room. It's like one of those moments where the Holy Spirit's just talking to you, and I thought, well, gosh, he knows me really well, and there's no one else here, and he's talking to me, and actually it was a room, you know, with at least as many people there are here now. So I went up to tell him at the end and just found myself in a ball of tears on his shoulders. And yeah, he took me under his wing, he mentored me, he met up with me for lunch every kind of couple of weeks, just to help me sort of start my faith off in a good direction. So
yes, amazing. But your sort of interest in dinosaurs hadn't gone away.
Yeah.
And so I understand that you went to Germany. Can you tell us
yes.
about that?
So I did my dissertation, and that the idea of that was I went to something called a fossil Lagerstätte.
Of course you did.
You know exactly what that means. It basically means a special fossil site where you can get kind of the soft tissues of things preserved. Anyway, I was there studying and expecting to kind of use this dissertation and some of the people I met to sort of leapfrog into a life of academic kind of study and doing a PhD in America perhaps and all sorts of things. And God had other plans and something went a bit wrong. So we went into the office of the kind of local area, if you like, one weekend to have a look at some of the specimens they'd found previously. We had special permission to stay in the office overnight. And a colleague that I was with decided, oh, we're bored, I'll boot up the computer and we'll play Minesweeper and stuff just to while away a few hours before we go to bed. We're fine, you know, it's no big deal. In German culture, that was seen as kind of raiding the drawers, and they were really worried about this because this site we were at was very special and they didn't want people to find out where it was. So, you know, if rogue fossil hunters would come and nick stuff. They thought we were, you know, doing dodgy things and dangerous things with their files, and so they kicked us off. And I didn't get to meet half the people I was supposed to meet. I didn't get to finish my dissertation properly. And we got booted out and left somewhere stranded in the middle of Germany to try and find our way home. So that was...
So Watergate has nothing. how did the lecturers at uni sort of react to your faith?
Yeah, so just before I'd done my dissertation, this had happened, coming to faith, and they'd caught wind of this through, I think, my flatmates. And one of my lecturers called me in for a sort of tutorial, and that the head of my department, in fact, was very much a kind of Dawkins-esque type atheist, and they were actually genuinely worried that I was studying that course just with the sole purpose of, you know, trying to disprove it all and find the holes in it, which was not true at all, but that's what they were worried about.
Yeah, some sort of spy,
yeah.
Basically, yeah. And so, but the track you've chosen now has also got more of a religious connotation,
yeah.
A faith connotation.
So this track is one of the tracks that was being played. We used to sing it at the New Frontiers Church a lot, so I love it. But I also chose it because Katie and I chose to have it at our wedding. So it's, you know, it's a worship song I hope to do.
So at that time you were sort of, where was the New Frontier Church based, actually?
Well, it was based in the community centre in Portsmouth.
Has
moved around since then.
Yes, but obviously something then brought you back to Sutton.
Yeah, so I was actually finishing my course, wondering what to do, praying about it, and there was a guest pastor, a guest speaker had come to preach the sermon that Sunday, and I'd been praying, God, should I stay here in Portsmouth, because I've found a faith with you in this church and I've never experienced this before, or should I go back home to my parents in Sutton? And this preacher happened to be from Penge, but he was moving to Sutton to start a new church plant with New Frontiers, funny enough, in my old school. So I took that as, you know, God saying, right, go home. So that's what I did.
Yes, along with other people saying go home, it was good. And now I've got my notes about Fusion 101, which is obviously sort of a cafe, is it? Or is it some sort of a rock band?
No,
or isn't
no,
there?
It is a Christian dating website.
Ah.
So upon return,
hang on just a second. We're getting to the bit that everybody wants to hear about. Okay, keep going.
When I returned to Sutton, the church hadn't actually started, so I went along to the Mother Church, which was a church in Wimbledon, and they had this kind of big 20s scene. You know, they had a kind of particular pastor just for 20s age people, and I was enjoying that. And what the sort of lead pastor had said, oh, if you're interested in meeting somebody, then there's this free website. You know, that this is back in the dark days before people really met online, because everyone meets online these days. But back then it was like, you want to meet someone online? What, that they might be like a weird rapist or something. You know, people were really kind of like, weird about it. So that's, I thought I'd have a look, and I met my lovely wife, Katie.
So did you swipe right or something?
Was no, that, was that it wasn't like that. No. It was, you know, profile pictures and lots of angsty writing.
Okay, so tell us about that. Tell us about your courtship.
So yeah, well, we met, we sort of chatted online for quite a number of months, I guess. And then I was working, you know, you graduate, you think you're going to sort of go into some high-flying career. I was working in Tesco's, stacking shelves, the only job I could find. And yeah, we spent a while chatting, and Katie was being very good about not sort of forcing the issue. She really wanted to meet me, but I was being quite cautious, and I was quite shy, actually.
You can tell, can't you?
Well, Katie's brought out the kind of confidence in me, I think. So, but eventually I did pluck up the courage to kind of say, let's meet up, and we did meet up, and we had a fun first date, didn't we? And then our second date, I was really just not very well. I was working night shift in Tesco, stacking shelves over Christmas, and we had actually booked, we planned to go, I think it was to the Millennium Dome. Well, that's where we did go. I can't remember what we had planned. But basically, I had to sort of say to Katie, like, I'm really just not well. And she thought, oh no, it's all over. I've been, you know, what do they call it? Pied or something?
Ghosted.
Yeah, ghosted.
Oh, ghosted.
Apparently, Katie's saying, I have no idea what that means. So yeah, I wasn't able to see her that day, but I did make it up to her, and we went out for a date to see J. John in the Millennium Dome Christmas Carol Just Ends of event thing. That was quite good fun.
Yes. So, I mean, just sort of fast-tracking a little bit, it's obviously the courtship went along the way as it normally does, and no doubt you then just went to a shop and bought her a ring.
Yeah, yes. I was fairly confident fairly early on that I'd like to marry Katie, and I decided to ask her best friend and flatmate
to marry her.
Whether this would be a good idea, and whether to help me out sort of in terms of ring sizes and those kinds of things. And of course, Katie's best friend was very excited by this and you know, really, you know, pleased for Katie, but then needed to keep it quiet. And typical me, I sort of took my time and procrastinated, and I had no clue about how much the secret was impacting Katie's friend. It just didn't occur to me. So yeah, it took a while, but then I think about 6 months after that, so we've been seeing each other for about 9 months, I think, we got engaged. We were actually at New Wine when we got engaged. So we were working on team together, and we decided that we would go and do a ring workshop. And during the team... well, it seems obvious, doesn't it? But we'd booked the workshop already, and without any particular thought of, oh, I'm gonna ask Katie to marry me today. And then we were in worship with the young people, the kids that we were kind of ministering to. And God had said to me, just in no uncertain terms, like really clearly, just, you need to propose to Katie with the ring you're going to make tonight. So, like, okay. And funny enough, God ruined the surprise, because he told Katie on the same night that this was going to happen. So, you know, God's ruined the surprise. But actually, it's a great for us, because we both have real confidence in, you know, God's anointing of our relationship. So that's a real, really good thing to carry with us, I guess. So I then made this ring, tried it on Katie's hand when she was, you know, we were measuring up to try and make this ring. And she was making one for me as well. Ask her, she'll show you the ring at some point. But yeah, basically we got out and we had to polish these rings, and we were sort of walking out of the kind of workshop, polishing our rings just to make them more shiny, and heading back towards the tents, and then got to the big top band. Up down on me, under the stars, and she wasn't at all surprised.
Well, I don't know about you, but as far as a sort of gentleman of sort of the way that I proposed to, you make me sick. So this next song?
This is a song that we chose to exit the church when we were getting married. It's a song that I really love, and Katie loves too, so we chose it. So. As a fun song to walk out of church to.
See that resonating more? You see the swaying going on there.
Getting older of a song, isn't it?
And so your next move was to go into teacher training.
Yes.
So in Harrow.
Indeed. So I'd been teacher training actually during the time that we were dating, and literally the same summer that we were married, I started a job. Christina knows the school
well. I know the school well, it was my school.
Indeed. So I was a teacher of science and geography and in fact dance at a school in Ruislip called Queensmead School.
Okay, and what was that like?
It was all right. It wasn't my... Teaching was something I really loved to do properly, but being a teacher in a school is a really difficult thing. So hats off to any of you who have been or are teachers. It's very hard work. And it just what didn't. When you train to do something in college and you want to do it well, but teachers are not given the time to do it properly. So I always felt a bit second rate. I felt like I was always playing catch up with my planning and so on, and it didn't quite click for me. So I stuck it out for a few years, but it was clear that it wasn't the long term thing for me.
Yes. So, you had applied for a job in the Natural History Museum, mm-hmm. sort of linked to your dinosaur business, which you didn't get.
Yes.
And you also then applied for a job in a private school, which yep. you didn't get. it's interesting, the jobs you did get were in Tesco's. But then you decided to apply for a job in outdoor education.
Yes, so the when I'd applied to work for the Natural History Museum, it was one of these kind of explainers, you know, so I thought I'd put my dinosaurs and my teaching together and have people come to me and I could explain dinosaurs. I didn't get that job. However, the lady who applied, who got the job, happened to be somebody I knew. So I knew the person who had also applied to this job and got it where I hadn't. And she was exiting a job in outdoor education. And it was Katie actually who suggested to me, why don't you apply for her vacant job? So I did. And that was in something called the West London Floating Classroom. So it was a canal boat, 72-foot long, 14-foot wide canal boat. And I took the job there teaching kids about canal history and wildlife as we cruised up and down the Grand Union Canal. So it was a fab job, really, really enjoyed it.
It sounds amazing. And there, your sort of rock stardom just took off. Do you want to tell us about that?
Yes. So some of my work colleagues, the organisation was part of a wider charity called Groundwork, which I'm sure some of you will have heard of. And some of my colleagues at Groundwork were musical. They were already sort of doing some Christmas concerts for the volunteers at the organisation. And they invited me as a drummer to come and sort of play at their Christmas carol concert. And we played that concert. And following that, just decided, OK, well, let's get together as a band and sort of play some covers just for fun. So sort of once a month or so, we'd stay late in the office, shut all the doors, and it was right in the middle of a country park, so no one could hear the racket, and we played away to our heart's content.
Yes. So the track we're going to hear is actually one of the band's tracks that was yep. written by members of the band,
yeah.
which thankfully you're not playing on. Is that
I'm,
right?
I'm not playing on this track, no. And no. you know, we started off playing a lot of covers and playing, you know, at weddings and bikers festivals and all sorts of random things that we got invited to. But towards the end of the time of the band, we started to write our own songs. And this song was written by a friend of mine, Vicky. She was the lead singer. And it's about her husband. Now, her husband was the skipper on the boat I worked on. So I knew him very well as well. Knew the two of them and their two kids. And she actually moved away to Norfolk with him, and then shortly afterwards the two of them separated. And this song is really a little bit about their marriage, and if you're listening to it back, it really moves me, because it's sort of the signs of the breakup are in the song, and it's a sort of a happy, sad sort of song for me.
So work with the band, that was good fun. But things all started to go haywire, the wheels coming off the wagon and everything.
Yeah. I mean, work-wise, it was tricky because I got moved into sort of more management position within the organisation, which wasn't really as much fun. And also, at a similar sort of time, Katie started to become a little unwell. So she was, you know, I was caring for her a fair amount of the time from about 2012, I guess, onwards.
Okay. And then a sort of thought about moving?
Yeah, well, around this sort of time, our vicar in the church we're in, Harrow, sort of said, oh, you know, we're retiring, we're leaving. So we thought, we came home from church one evening and sort of looked at each other and said, oh, I wonder if God's calling us to a new season in our life, a new chapter. And we were sort of a bit frustrated with London and the stressfulness of busy life in London, and wondered about moving actually somewhere not too far from here. So we initially talked about Hayling Island. Katie, as many of you know, is from, she grew up in Basildon just down the road. I had roots in Portsmouth from university, and we just wondered about, well, is the sort of Solentish area the right kind of place for us? A bit more gentle place of life and somewhere we'd like to move to. So I started looking for work in outdoor education around here, but I really just struggled and that didn't go anywhere. And yet at the same time, people at church suddenly started randomly saying to me, oh, you'd make a good vicar, Mike, wouldn't you? And, you know, people hadn't said that to me before, and yet suddenly people started saying to me all at the same time, and when that sort of thing happens, you start listening. So we started knocking on a few doors and pushing a few doors and seeing what would happen with that.
Right. And so the sort of music then is more sort of current worship music. Do you want to tell us about this next one?
Yeah, this is a song that I really love. When Katie was unwell, we went to see this band. It's called the Rain Collective. They're a fab contemporary worship band with a sort of folksy twist to them. And this is a really great song that just speaks of where we should find our strength and what's called the joy of the Lord.
Not to worry. I mean, Rent Collective were singing in a basement there, which is fine. Okay, so at this stage, Katie was pregnant.
Yes.
So that was sort of quite a tough time for you. Mm-hmm. Do you want to just talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I mean, part of the reason Katie got ill was our trying to get pregnant, and that took a long time, and it's a long story. But yeah, actually, when Katie did get pregnant, it was fantastic for the first couple of trimesters. Katie was really well, on top form, and then it wasn't until sort of the last bit of the pregnancy where she became particularly ill. She was suffering with a kind of depression, and it was really quite a difficult time. And at the same time, I was being made redundant from my job at Groundwork. Management reshuffle, and they decided to get rid of the middle management. But, you know, at the same time, God was moving in our lives and speaking to us and calling us towards, you know, ordained ministry. And actually, by being made redundant, I ended up working for a church. So having been made redundant, I said to God, well, look, I think you're calling me to ordained ministry. Should I go and work for another outdoor education thing? Should I try and go back into teaching, or should I look for something in church work? And ended up working for a church in central London called St. Stephen's. So it's near Paddington. Actually not far from, it was in the same deanery as Matt Clunes, who many of you know.
But then you're actually sort of seeking for ordination and going forward. So tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so just shortly after I started at St. Stephen's, I then went to what's called a BAP Bishop's Advisory Panel. So they take you away for a weekend, ask you lots of difficult questions and grill you and, you know, find out.
What's your musical choice?
Yeah, that's it. Find out if they think you're made of the right stuff to kind of go and train. So fortunately they said yes, because I'd already sort of played my chips, if you like, doing church work. And they said yes. So I started to train. And because Katie was actually just literally ready to pop at that point, Isaac was nearly here. And we decided, you know, actually, if we try and... My first choice of college was going to be a college called Wycliffe Hall in Oxford, which is where Gavin trained. And we went there and visited it. And to be honest, we weren't blown away by it. and also moving to Oxford when you've got a like 2-week-old baby really wasn't going to be very practical. And at the same time, I discovered that a college that I'd been told wasn't for me, called St. Vilitas, went and visited it just to check it out, and actually really loved the place and felt that it was very much, you know, my cup of tea. It's where I met Matt, funny enough. And one of the things that's unique about St. Vilitas is the way they train their vicars is not to take them away to, you know, residential theological college, but actually to train on the job. And so they expect everyone who's training with them to have some kind of role within the church. So this job that I'd just started a few months previously was perfect and just, you know, for training with this college.
So whereabouts were you sort of placed when you were sort of training?
Yeah, so the church... St. Stephen's was the church of that, although my role within that was a mission role. So if anyone's heard of the Eden Project, or the Eden Network, not the Eden Project, that's something else. It's a Christian charity that started in Manchester doing estates work. So going in, my job basically was to go into the local council estate on our patch and to do missional, run missional projects there with people. So the main thing I ended up doing was running a tutor group. So the parish was an interesting one because it's kind of Notting Hill area. So it's very wealthy in some ways, but also very poor in others. And there's this massive difference between the rich kids who could afford whatever education they wanted and the poor kids on the other side of the street whose educational chances were really quite poor. So we ran this free tuition for the kids on the estate.
Right. And so your actual training obviously just confirmed everything you thought about your faith and just sort of just made it crystal clear.
Yeah, it was absolutely the best time in the world. No. theological training kind of... You end up asking yourself some very difficult questions about God, and it really sort of unpicked my faith somewhat in a helpful but troubling way. So it was difficult, and I think
just the next song.
The song actually kind of is really interesting because during this time we were kind of trying to work out where's next, and we felt like Portsmouth was calling, and this track basically is a track. That has a line in it from Isaiah 43, and whenever God wants to call me or speak to me about something, he uses this song, this scripture, Isaiah 43. It's come up and up again, and I did a placement in Portsmouth Cathedral wondering whether God was calling us to the diocese, and when I was in the cathedral there was a hymn where we sang Isaiah 43, the whole hymn, and that was, I just felt God was very much speaking to me, obviously through Isaiah 43, because he's done it before through that song. But I didn't want to choose that hymn, because actually I really don't like the hymn or the tune at all. But my placement was also partly at Harbour Church, which is a church plant in the city. And the same day that I heard that hymn, this song was also being played. And there are two lines in it. You'll be with us with the fire, you're with us in the fire and the flood, which is also a little snippet of Isaiah 43, so this is Sovereign Over Us.
Well, that's bringing us nearly up to date. And St. Stephen's, I mean, I'm really interested in the fact that you're looking very specifically at Welcome here at St. John's. And I know there's something you were involved with at St. Stephen's, the sort of an outreach thing. Do you want to tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, I guess my entire role was outreach, and that's the kind of estate work that I was doing. But I did also have some projects to do with my college. So aside from leading services and preaching and so on, I did a similar kind of a welcome project there. So a research project looking at how the church might adjust its welcome.
And I'm not quite sure what it was called, the Get Together?
Oh, okay. So Get Together was something we did, Katie and I did previous to that, actually, in Harrow. So the church we were at in Harrow, we ran a group together called Get Together, and really that was part of the way in which we discovered that, you know, ministry was a good fit for me, I think, because the group we started off by calling it Extreme Welcome, and it was really the church used to do welcome lunches, and we thought we could do them better, so we got together with some of the couple that did the welcome lunches and some other people and tried to do these welcome lunches a bit better, and the whole idea was, we brilliant Christians who love Jesus, whenever anyone comes into church, we're going to find the new people and we're going to invite them to a lunch and we're going to make them feel so welcome that they'll never want to leave, and it's going to be brilliant. Of course, you know, it really didn't work. People came, people enjoyed it. It was a nice time to have lunch, but it really wasn't. People that did come to the lunches didn't want to come back. And we discovered a secret that actually community is built when you require something of other people. And so we started, instead of making these lunches about us serving people in our kind of high and mighty, aren't we lovely Christians way, we started to say, actually, can you help? Can you bring food? Can you wash up for us? I know it's your first week, but we really need help in the kitchen. And through doing that, just the whole thing got turned on its head, and a whole bunch of people that were from miles and miles away, and some of you who are at My Ordination will have met some of them, they just started getting involved, and we found ourselves running this rather sort of successful ministry to lonely people, really, and people often with sort of mild learning difficulties and that kind of thing. They just would turn up and eat with us and bring food and help cook and wash up afterwards and open scripture together, and it was just a really good time.
Yeah, so you mentioned your ordination, and that's one of the things that, really got me, actually, your ordination, was the number of those people that had come to support you,
yeah.
Which was just fantastic, absolutely amazing.
And it's remarkable, they would come to church, some of them from Slough all the way to Harrow. Now, for many of you, the geography is probably a bit lost there, but that's a good, like, 20, 30-minute drive every Wednesday just to come and be a part of this church group that we were running, and it was all spread through word of mouth through each other, you know.
Yes. And that brings you to here. So, how have you found us?
Yeah.
Well, that could be answered two ways. How do I find you? I think there's a much longer story that we'd really love to tell at some point, but God has definitely been calling us here. And I've talked about Isaiah 43, and that was one of the ways which we sort of started to explore whether this was the right diocese and the right place. And I had thought it would be that I'd be doing a Curacy at Harbour Church. That didn't really work out for various reasons. And then I'd seen the job here advertised and thought, because Katie's mum lives in Burslington, and that's Winchester Diocese, and it's very close to there, I'd figured this was Winchester Diocese. So I'd seen the advert and gone, well, I don't think God's calling us to Winchester Diocese. I think it's Portsmouth. And the job looks a bit okay, but not great. Hold it for a minute. You know, just kind of ignored it. And then I happened to be chatting with Gabby Doherty, who was training with me. And those of you who might think, who's Gabby Doherty? Gabby was not only the wife of my tutor, Sean, but also godparent to some of Gavin's children. So, and she was saying, oh, I think I know the person who runs that church. And actually said to me, look, what's there on paper, this advert, is not indicative of what the community is like. It doesn't say what you guys are really all about. And actually, I think you should probably go and check it out. So I had a long chat with Sean, who knew Gavin from training at Wycliffe. And it was very clear to me from my chat with Sean that Gavin and I were on the same page, very similar kind of people and thinking a similar way, and came to sort of explore a bit further and found something that I was very surprised to see when I got here, actually. Just a very vibrant community of people doing lots of amazing things. So
your final choice of song?
So yeah, this song I think comes out of the get together thing. So part of the reason that we sort of mixed up the what was the welcome group is because we felt God calling us to kind of reach out and giving us a heart for mission. So this song is a favourite of mine. It's Tim Hughes' We Must Go, and it just really speaks of what we as Christians I think should be doing in order to get out there and be missional. Get our hands into, stuck into kind of dirty stuff in the world.
Well, it's a nice music. It's nice instrumental anyway. This is good.
It's God of justice, Saviour to all, came to rescue the weak and the poor, chose to serve and not be served. Jesus, He has called us. Freely we receive, freely we must give. We must go. Live to feed the hungry. Stand beside the broken. We must go. Stepping forward, keep us from just singing. Move us into action. We must go.
Fair enough. Well, I'm glad you can remember words, because one of the other things before we sort of finish is that Mike has got a sort of very important role coming up in church, which is that he's going to feature at Easter as Jesus in the miracle. So the first balletic tap dancing Jesus.
Roller
skating, yes. So, Mike, if just sort of sum up here, as you know, Desert Island Discs, you're allowed to just choose one track. If you're going to choose one out of those eight, what would you choose?
I mean, that is a ridiculously difficult choice if anyone's tried to do this. But, you know, it would have to be, I think, Guns N' Roses.
That's the one. That's the one. Speech on the mic. There you go. That's one supporter. And if you were to choose just one, so you've got the Bible, which obviously you know by heart.
Yeah.
And
yes,
the
complete,
well, it's a Shakespeare, which I know by heart. So what other book would you choose?
Well, I figured, you know, if you're stuck on a desert island for a long time, it needs to be a long book. And there's a book that I started reading and never managed to make it through the first little bit, and that's Lord of the Rings. Great book. I read The Hobbit and breezed through it and loved it. I just never got around to it, so it would be definitely Lord of the Rings.
And one luxury?
So to while away the hours, one thing that I love doing is just messing around with Lego. So I decided my luxury, if that's okay,
yes,
a giant box of Lego.
It's yours. Excellent. Just to sort of conclude here, every time I've been talking about you, Mike, at home, I always say Mike Moritz. And it just becomes like Mike Moritz. And I think now that we know you really, really well, we don't need to say Mike Moritz, we can just say Mike. So Mike, thank you very, very much indeed. Mike. So, thank you for coming. I hope you enjoyed, well, I know you've enjoyed this evening, and thank you, Mike, very much indeed for the time you put into this. And we look forward to your ministry here at church, and also your Jesus skills. Excellent. Thank you very much indeed. Thank you.